podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing...
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast, where I have to say we've always been a big fan of picking Scotsmen long before it became fashionable. And with that in mind, I'm delighted to say that my co-host for this week is Alan Dimmick. How are you, Al?
Very good, very good. It's you've done me a favour. You've got me inside. I live in what potentially is the epicentre of the middle class sporting world at the moment. I live a hefty spit from Wimbledon centre court, and so you've got me indoors so that I don't get caught up in the Pimm's thunderstorm, and also I get to lock my doors and drown out the sound of "It's coming home, it's coming home." So you've done me a massive favour.
Mate, I think this is it. It's basically the rest of the world. Well, sorry, the rest of the UK has got engulfed with, with England are going to win the Euros type stuff. So it could only a certain kind of person, and by that I mean a Welshman and a Scotsman, could sit in at 7 p.m. on a Saturday evening and pick the bones out of the Lions versus the Gauteng Lions.
Well, actually, yeah, and I appreciate how you've gone straight for a Gauteng. You've gone traditional. Didn't go for Transvaal. Disappointed with you for that. I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of hefty stuff here, but importantly, playing today in the centre against the Lions was Burger Odendaal. Is that the most quintessentially South African name? Will they play against anyone with as fantastic, as essentially South African a name as that all tour?
It's a great show. I didn't even make notes, Al. I made a few notes in my head about things I wanted to bring up with you. One of which was how much the Golden Lions, and we're going to flick between Gauteng Lions, Golden Lions, Emirates Lions, Transvaal. I think we should throw it around like Finn Russell here, right? We can refer to them as many different sides. But did you not think that their number nine looked an awful lot like Andy Robinson?
Well, he was, as a man who has to shave his head, I appreciate he is fighting a losing battle on that front. So in that sense, with a sandy hair colour, yes, a little bit. I mean, he was in the wars, to be fair. He was gushing blood at one point in the first half, and he had to go in. He was very keen. I would say that, and that's... Whether you think that's a compliment or not, I mean, certainly they were very keen. The Sigma Lions were very keen. Go on.
I was just going to say because the thing is, all the pre-match build-up was the Emirates Lions, I believe, because that in my head that's who their sponsors were. And that's the way things work in South Africa. But then when we got into the pub, and obviously, as you can probably tell from my slurring of words, I've been watching the game in the pub. It said SIG versus BIL on the and I didn't understand. Kind of like I was like, what is the name of this side? We've played this side so many times, we play them every single tour, and I can't quite figure out what their blooming name is.
Well, this is a bit of inside baseball. They are famously... You need to squeeze a bit to get some comms out of them as a club, and they changed their name 48 hours before this match,
Right.
So their stadium is named, we all know the stadium, but it's one of the most famous rugby stadiums on the planet. However, it is named after the sponsor, so it's called Emirates Airlines Stadium, I believe, or something along those lines. However, I believe for the purposes of this tour, it's been called the Johannesburg Stadium. It's got a name that's just weird.
But this is Ellis Park, right? We know it as Ellis Park.
Yeah. So yes, exactly. But this is 2021, and you know what? Why keep things simple when we can make them as muddy as possible? So I'm all for it, because to be honest, if we could talk about the rugby, effectively, they are the weakest team that the Lions their face on tour. They were the weakest South African side in the Rainbow Cup. They've traditionally been one of the weakest. They've lost a lot of talent over the last couple of years. So the only way that they can do anything against the Lions is to muck things up. And that's what their job essentially is in a test like this. In the end, quality is what told. I think with the British and Irish Lions, who henceforth we will just call the Lions, there were moments of rustiness. You know, sticking out in my head, I can remember Hill throwing a pass to absolutely no one in the middle of the park and it hitting the dirt, kicks out on the full. At one point, Owen Farrell was, and we can talk about this a little bit, Owen Farrell was running crash balls and he ran too flat on Ali Price, who threw it into his shoulder. There was moments like that that didn't quite click. But in the end, the Lions just had too much quality. So they had the beating of their hosts, and you know there were enough moments there that we can talk about. I mean, Josh Adams got 4 tries. That's insane on a tour. You know, really, he's taken his opportunity well. We can talk about the fact that, have you ever seen Terminator 2 and the T-1000?
Have I ever seen Terminator 2?
No, you know, the T-1000, the bad guy, is probably the fastest actor that's ever run in a movie with the Japanese. That was Hogg when he went back to snuff out a certain try from a big Hauteng break. And there was just lots of stuff. You know, Chris Harris putting a nice chip for Lewis Rees-Zammit to score on his, unfazed at 20 years old, scoring on his Lions debut 4 minutes into the game. There's just lots of stuff, lots of nice little things. So there was messiness, absolutely, but it's the first game in country, lots of new well, we can also talk about the fact that there's some recognised combinations within that. So, you know, Price and Russell are best friends. They were starting together. We've got some of the England guys across the middle of the scrum who went really hard. I think Courtney Laws probably won't get as much praise as I think he should. I think he was physically exceptional and made a lot of things tick around him. And then, you know, Watson, if we're talking about Adams throwing his hand up, we can talk about Watson, who was given man of the match, despite the fact that he didn't score 4 tries. He only got 1. He was given man of the match by the local coverage. And certainly he looked bang up for it. So, you know, whilst there wasn't anything where you'd be like, this will dominate the headlines, there were lots of nice little bits in the game.
I think essentially, Al, that brings us around to what tour games mean in 2021, doesn't it? Because it's not like, you know, the 1974 tour where everyone goes and you get a chance to prove yourself. And if you know, you can really play yourself in because you've got 17 tour games before the first test. It is about trying out a few different combinations and seeing the things that work well. How much do you think places are up for grabs, or how much do you think that Warren Gatland and his team have kind of decided who's going to start that first test already?
Well, there are certain positions where it would just be, you can just assume that the majority of the pack picks itself for the Lions. The majority of, I mean, if you're looking at current form, there are players who you think it would just be silly for them to not be starting. There are only a few positions where you would say that is up for grabs. That is the function of these games. But really, it's more about bedding in the style that you want to do. Because remember, this tour, more than the last couple, is we've got coaches that haven't worked with these groups of players before. So it's about bedding in systems. It's interesting. If you talk, this is a big debate we've had in the Rugby World Office recently, actually. Is, so we've just sent our most recent issue of the magazine to bed. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. Please, everyone, go and buy it so I can pay my mortgage. And the one of the things that we talk about every 4 years, actually, really, and everyone talks about every 4 years, is the legacy of the Lions, how you protect the concept. And one of the things that I've had a bit of a debate with folk in the office about is how many games are enough games for it to feel special. Now, if you listen to some people who have been on recent tours, they would say that, thank God, the number of games has been rattled down. Because essentially all it is doing is building to the test series. You'll have others. Now, obviously, take COVID out of the equation because it's blown up the world and it's not as special as it could be. But if you're looking at a tour in a normal, you want it to feel special. You want to feel like you're seeing all that a country has to offer. You want to feel like you're really up against an entire nation and see X, Y, Z. So where do you find that balance? A lot of people in Rugby World, my colleagues, will say, a 10 minimum is enough. But how, my argument would be in the modern game is, how far do you go before, say you get the dream result where you get 2 weeks of preparation rather than the 25 minutes of preparation the Lions seem to get before they head out on tour at the moment. And the unions all actually relent and say, let's give the Lions a fighting chance. And they get a fortnight together to bed things in as a full group, and then they go out on tour. How many extra games do you have to play at the other end before that's undone? You know, when you're throwing guys in for too long. So there's probably a short window. And in this case, I think there's a few places up for grabs. I think if you look at this game today, the fact that Finn Russell was hoiked off around about the hour mark, I can't remember exactly when, and Owen Farrell gets to play in his more natural position. And there were some moments where, as I mentioned earlier, Owen Farrell overran something. He was running crash balls, which I wouldn't say is naturally his position. But and he also slipped off a tackle on the edge, which led to the first Hauteng try. Those are blips. I imagine that someone like Owen Farrell will be given every opportunity in the world to see if he can stake his claim for that test spot, because he offers that element of control. And I think there are some players that are in that camp. There are obviously players that are nailed on to start the tests. But I think the function of these games is to identify the people. What happens every tour, there might be someone that throws their hand up that you wouldn't expect. We're thinking of Alex Corbusiero in 2013, for example. There are guys that will throw their hand up and say, that test spot is mine because no one's laid a claim for it. There's a few of those around. The rest of the time is about bedding in the shape and the style. And I think today was probably a quite good start of that, but you'd probably want to really get the benefit of that. You're going to have to play against stronger opposition, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Essentially, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Alan. It's not the strongest opposition that we're going to face. Like you said, I think that is probably the weakest side. The interesting thing for me is kind of the trends that we start to see. And I think obviously we're only two games in and two selections in, but a couple of things caught my eye before the game in terms of selection. And one was, if you look back to the game at Murrayfield, you had Tyke Burns starting at six. Today you had Courtney Laws starting at six, which again, it will come as no surprise when you saw the overall squad selection that you have got a lot of locks who can play in the back row, that this might well become a theme. But also I think that today there were two very robust centres in action, and you had, like you say, Farrell isn't a crash ball running centre, but he's certainly a physical one. You know, he's certainly not afraid to put himself about when it comes to defence. Chris Harris, likewise, is a very physical defence orientated centre, and I kind of wonder whether that's the themes that we're going to start to see now. Is there anything that you saw during the game that you think is going to be, you know, is going to follow on from that? Any of those things that we can expect to see as we head into the test series?
Well, actually, you mentioned there the balance of the back row, and I think that's one of those things we're going to be debating that. You know, Hamish Watson's got a man of the match today, so there's going to be a lot of talk of that because Curry is the favourite. I've seen a lot of people in my profession over the last couple of weeks going, starting spots, Curry's already, like, next question, move on. Like, let's start talking about other things, don't be silly. Actually, I think it's a big talking point come in. Actually, you raise an interesting point, because Sam Warburton said this during commentary in the game, as he mentioned Courtney Laws playing at six, and he talked about the potentially you could see Curry and Watson play together in the back row, whether that throws an awful lot of work onto Faletau, if you assume he's going to be the starting number eight, or if Conan starts at number eight, or if Simmons throws his hand up, you know, where the balance of that comes in, and how much you need someone like an enforcer type, like a Laws, like a Byrne, who can do all the back row work, but also offers you ballast and breakdown so that you can flit about a bit more. Because a lot of the chat we're going to get during this Lions tour is about the speed of the breakdown. Listen to a lot of experts, and we'll talk about the fact that in the last year, the speed of the breakdown has been quicker. There's a lot more ball in play from that facet. So it's, if we're going to expect that zip, do you pick your pack accordingly? Do you need someone that offers ballast in the breakdown, and then another two guys in the back row that fly about a bit more? Which would be mad, right? To see Curry and Watson flying about would be fun. I have no idea how the hell that would work, but I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple games' time we see something like that. The other thing that I've noticed, actually, that's a carryover from the Japan game to this one is, obviously, it was sad to see Justin Tiberius go with a shoulder injury. But in the little time that we did see from him, there was a lot of link play from him from the line-out. And today, we saw the same thing from Hamish Watson, where Hamish Watson was slinging an awful lot of passes from the line-out into open play, which meant that you got your playmakers a little bit further out, and suddenly you had more running threats on the first shoulder of the defence.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the back row is fascinating out, and I, for one, do not think that Curry is in any way nailed on. I'm excited to see him play. I think we also might get in the next game, we might get the opportunity to see Curry and Navidi play together, possibly, which I think is a very exciting prospect in terms of having two, you know, kind of two twin fetchers out there. I mean, there are so many wonderful options.
That's a gnarly back row.
Oh, it's gnarly. I mean, it's not for me playing against even players like that who, you know, I mean, I can only imagine playing against players, not into even in terms of quality, but in terms of those attributes, it terrifies me. But I think those guys are very much in the running, but Watson laid down a marker today for me. And I do think that what he showed was, it wasn't just about, oh, I'm brilliant over the ball, which we know he is. It was how much, every time he got the ball, he bumped someone off and made 10 yards and scored a try and offered link play. I mean, he's got an absolute abundance of talent and an abundance of skills in his, in his golf bag, so to speak. And I think Curry's got an awful lot to do, actually. And I kind of think that Gatland will see it in that same way. I think that Curry is a wonderful player when he's playing to his absolute best. And I'm a very, very big fan. But I think he has kind of had a season that's not necessarily, certainly internationally, has not necessarily caught the eye. So again, that's where I think these games are interesting, is can he go out and put in a really eye-catching performance? Because I think Watson has certainly done that.
Well, I think I might be right in saying that Curry is the current, despite not having a fantastic year as a nation, I think Curry is, could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure he's the reigning English player of the year in the most recent awards. So obviously the players around him respect him enormously. And look, he's a fantastic talent. Sale, you know, had a pretty good season. And I think him and his brother were at the fore of that. I think he's a phenomenal rugby player. And to be honest, it's a bit harsh, you know, judging now. We haven't seen him play in the red yet. So it's, you know, it's, and if I was him, actually, I'd probably be just trying to cut off Hamish Watson's hair. It might be a Samson situation where his powers may diminish once the back end of that moulet has gone. But certainly, there's an interesting one. I've got two questions, actually, from watching that game. Firstly, and I don't know if this is the case at all, because in football, if you score a hat-trick, you get to take the match ball home. Does Josh Adams now get to take the match ball home with him?
Great question. I've never played in a side where anyone's been good enough to score three tries, so I couldn't answer that. But surely you're going to have to give them the ball, surely.
Signs that ball, that would just make sense, and if that doesn't happen, that should now be instated. And the second one is I think there was some good stuff, and he was brilliant at linking. He caught he got past the ball from Russell direct for the opening try. He got past the ball to Russell, he turned back, gave a bad loop pass to Farrell, who then gave the pass to Harris, who chipped over for Lewis Rees-Zammit to score. Jamie George did some nice things today. Do you think he will, as much as modern players should be able to brush things off, do you think he's going to wake up in a cold sweat thinking about the ball that Josh Adams kicked through that didn't bounce in front of him, and he didn't get a beautiful try, and he spaffed that on? And I feel bad for Jamie George, because he's a very good player. He's a great player, in fact, and he's a very affable bloke. But that's just one of those things where it was quite funny.
Yeah, I do think he's going to wake up in a cold sweat on that one, because it was there, you know, when you see it and they had the perfect camera angle behind it, that it sat up, and I think that any other time he would back himself to score that. I do think that will haunt him a little bit, because let's be honest, throwing in and, you know, hitting your man at the line out and making lots of tackles and all these unglamorous things that go with being a hooker, he wants to score tries, and the opportunity was there. I think that'll annoy him a little bit.
I'll tell you what, though. It was pretty open. You know, the Lions scored some tries. I mean, for example, there were just moments where, for example, the first Houtang try was a missed tackle. They broke down the touchline, and it was just a race in. The Lions scored some tries where, for example, Josh Adams' hat-trick try was from just no one from Houtang going in, contesting a ruck. Hill going in, pinching the ball and just popping it to Adams to race in. There was some fairly open moments like that. Tell you who'll be pretty pleased, though, from just nailing our what we've done on the training field kind of thing, is Gregor Townsend, because you'll have seen an awful lot, you know, because of the relative weakness, all due respect to them, the relative weakness of Haitang, it meant that the Lions could score some first phase tries from set piece, like the line out, because of what was up against them. So they threw up some interesting things. There was and commentary brought this up quite a few times, where there was an option over and over again to throw long in the line out to a centre. Chris Harris offered himself an awful lot of times. For the Ali Price try, it was Farrell that was there. He just took the ball, turned and hit Price, and it was just a canter through to the line. It was a good opportunity to just try some training ground stuff, you reckon?
Oh, 100%. And that was, I think it was evident. Particularly Lions. I'm struggling to think of a game, Lions or otherwise, where there has been so much success with the line out being thrown across the back. And it worked a number of times. Obviously, a couple of occasions it didn't. But yeah, I think you're right. It did have a feel, particularly after the first 15 minutes of being a little bit of a training ground exercise. I think because the Lions got on the scoreboard so early on with two tries from Lewis Rees-Samet and Hamish Watson, it gave that opportunity. But, you know, let's be honest, that's what these games are all about. It is about trying out different combinations and trying a few things and seeing if they're going to work.
And actually on that, what did you make of the Russell-Farrell access at 10-12, because there would have been a lot of focus on that. Some people would say chalk and cheese in terms of style. You know, we saw Stuart Hogg was playing at fullback today. A lot of people would have said, Farrell apparently came out well in some inter-squad voting for a potential captain with Alan Jones gone, didn't get the nod. This game, he was obviously given the opportunity just to play and not focus about being a leader or anything like that. What did you make in the hour or so that we saw from Russell and Farrell together? Because, you know, Russell did some very Finn Russell things where he was getting a lot of praise to open up the first try because he spotted the space and the opportunity to run. But also there was moments where he'd kick the ball straight into touch, which is a thing he does. He tried a couple of crossfield kicks that didn't come off. He tried one that did come off for Josh Adams. He put in a beautiful one to set up the try. Was there the understanding there? What did you make of that relationship? Do you think that will get a chance to go, or is that one of those things where Warren Gatland might look at it and go, okay, we gave that a go. That's probably not playing to everyone's strengths.
I don't feel like it's a massive Warren Gatland style combination, if I'm honest. I think that...
Do you think his arm was twisted by the other coaches around them to give it a go?
No, I don't think that either. I think that, look, it's an opportunity, like you say, it's the weakest opposition that you're going to face on the tour. And I'm not saying that that's why they've been played together, but I do think that it gives you the opportunity to experiment a little bit with, particularly with your back line. And he's obviously, you know, we know what Finn Russell can do. And again, we saw glimpses of it in this game. I don't really feel like there was enough in it to say this is the 10-12 axis that we're going to get really excited by. I still feel like Dan Bigger is very much favourite to play at 10, because I think he controls a game, particularly, you know, if you're looking at a test match series against South Africa. I think he controls the game so well that at the moment, I think it's a real scrap between Finn Russell and Owen Farrell as to who is the replacement 10 on the bench. And I think Finn Russell is very much the favourite for that for me.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, I don't think, personally speaking, I don't think Owen Farrell was helped by having to take the ball to the line, off an angle. I just don't think that's a strength. Obviously, if there's a style you want to play, and you see the way that Bundy Aki played in the first game against Japan. Obviously, we're not going to get a chance to see Robbie Henshaw play against the Sharks because he's had a slight tweak, so they want to protect him, and that makes total sense because his form is undeniable, and you could see the quality shining through against Japan. And he obviously has a good relationship with Bundy Aki. Bundy Aki is one of those guys, actually, where there was a lot of murmurs about his selection, but actually you look at some of the dispatches from that, it seems like the guys in the squad have got a lot of time for him. He's actually, I've heard from some folk in Ireland, he's very respected as a tourist. So he's one of those players whose stature might grow the longer this tour goes on. But he offers something completely different from Owen Farrell. And expecting Farrell to play the exact same way as he does, I don't think is going to help the Lions. So I suppose the bigger debate is if you're going to have someone like Finn Russell who comes on to play for the Lions in a test match, if we assume that it's Dan Biggar's jersey to lose, if, as you say, he's ahead of the race, which I wouldn't necessarily agree with, to be honest, is that does he, to play a Finn Russell, do you need a 12 that runs that angle against the grain, that runs towards the seam of the behind the line out, who runs, who ties in defenders to throw up your other playmakers elsewhere? If you have Finn Russell, do you need that safety blanket?
It's a great point. You might well do. My other thought on that is the one, there's a few positions for me that look nailed on at the moment. And like I say, I think it's his biggest position to lose. You've mentioned Robbie Henshaw there. I think Robbie Henshaw is in pole position to play, very much the starting centre. But I do also think that if you got late onto it into a test match and you brought Finn Russell on at 10, I think you could have him doing those hard, I think you'd have Henshaw doing those hard yards at centre for him, you know, someone who can run and hit a line and either break a tackle or just take a seriously big hit and do that job for you. I don't see it as being, like we said, I don't see it as being Owen Farrell's job, but I could see Henshaw as doing that for you, whether he starts at 12 or 13. I could see him doing that towards the end of a test match.
Well, it's an interesting one because we mentioned combinations at the top there, and it's, if you want to talk about combinations, if you want Finn Russell as the guy coming off the bench to offer you something different, do you bring his best mate with him? Do you put Price in at 9? Price looked pretty good today. But then Gareth Davis comes on and scores a try because Gareth Davis always scores tries. And it's one of those things where that battle for that, I'd actually say that the battle for the backup 9 position is almost, after today, more interesting than the battle for the backup 10. Because I think most people would go, if you're pragmatic, you go for Farrell as the backup 10 and or you start him at 12. If you want to have something to open up the game, if you really want to throw the dice later in the game because things aren't going the way you want and you want to throw South Africa something that they don't know what to deal with, you have Russell on the bench. The 9 one is purely down to form and purely down to taste, because it's almost like I wouldn't say that there's a vast, there are obviously slight differences in styles, and scrum half coaches or will be able to give you a lot more detail on that. But that's almost, for me, more of an interesting battle. That's one of those ones that will come down to form on the tour. Now, obviously, Warren Gatland knows Davis very, very well, but then Gregor Townsend knows Price very, very well, and both did pretty well today.
Yeah, I agree with you on both of that. I think it is a fascinating battle. I also think that ultimately, I do think Gatland has probably got an idea in his head, but I also don't think that is necessarily means that Gareth Davis gets the nod as backup 9. I think that it's up for grabs. It is definitely up for grabs. And Davis, I think, got the nod on the tour because Gatland knows what he's capable of. And I think he's a big game player and he scores tries and he has a big impact. But likewise, I don't feel like Ali Price is in any way out of this, because he's a very different player to Davis. I think that Price to me is more of a starting 9, really. And I don't know whether that will count against him or for him, because I think he's got, he's got excellent service. I think he's got a great, fantastic left peg. Whereas Gareth Davis is more about a bit of an instinct, and we know how important Sean Edwards thought his defense was, and kind of we saw that in World Cup 2019. But you're absolutely right, it's a fascinating battle, and one, Al, that we are definitely going to get stuck into in the second half of the show. But right now we're going to take a quick break. Fascinating first half with a good friend of the show, Alan Dimmock. We've just been talking about the battle for scrum half, or more so the battle for backup scrum half, Al. I've just given you a few of my thoughts on there. Where do you stand as to kind of who's in pole position for that spot on the bench? Because let's be honest, it's Conor Murray's tour captain. That's his role. It is very, very interesting when you get to look at who the backup nine is going to be. Backup's not the right word, but you know who the nine on the bench is going to be. That number 21 shirt.
Well, it depends what congregation you're part of, because are we going to call it finisher, or are you going to call it system? What's it Bristol call it? System players.
I'm calling it none of that.
But actually, being realistic, they're always going to be a replacement because they're on the bench and they're replacing someone. So let's just stick to that. But you know, the idea of being a system player is probably more what we're talking about here, because there will be, by the time the tests roll around, the coaches will have hoped that there is a system that is in place. Now, there might be variations on a theme. There might be bits and pieces from, and I've seen a lot of people, analysts say that there are bits and pieces from defensive systems and attacking systems from other clubs, from other nations that come together to make the Lions. And you've got a... I almost swore there. You've got to play with the hand you're dealt is a very nice way of saying a well-known phrase that they use in Scotland about urinating with what you've been given. What's in front of you, that's what you use to play with. And there will be naturally a system will come forth that with the players that you've got. And they're not quite there yet, which is why you've seen players running too flat or not quite having the timing of pass. We've seen that in the first two games that the Lions have played, where the timing isn't quite there yet, because these players have got to get used to guys that they're not there with. You, over time, hopefully, particularly with athletes this good, you develop a shorthand. So the style of play will come with that. So then when it comes to the test is, with that style, who best fits that system? And if you were to, if the box were next week, then I'd imagine you'd go with who Gatland has the most experience with in big matches, which would be Davis. That just makes sense, particularly in that idea of coming off and making something happen in the latter stages of a game. Realistically, what Ali Price has to do then is change the mindset going forward as that style bids in. That's the challenge for players in those movable feast positions where they're not quite nailed on yet, is you've got to make yourself part of that system that naturally develops on a tour. I say as someone that's never been on played on a Lions tour, but you know what it's like. We've all
not yet, Al, not yet.
Yeah, true. There's still time. The window's shortening, but there's still time. Difficult to do from Southwest London, I'd admit, but we'll see. So I'd imagine that's where we are, but that's the thing is anything can happen. And you're right though. And actually what you mentioned, the fact that Conor Murray is, even if he wasn't tour captain, we'd be talking about the fact that Conor Murray is the go-to guy. What I'm interested in actually is I'm sure you've spoken at length since the fallout of the last game. And I'm sure there's been a lot of discussions on with your mates, as there is, I think anyone who's a rugby fan has talked about this, because we were led to believe before, as the squad selection was coming up, what's the race for captain going to be? And we were all pretending that Alan Wynne-Jones wasn't nailed on to be the tour captain. And we were talking about whether Maro Itoje might be in the race, whether there are other people going to come in. What have you made of the selection of Conor Murray, a guy who's very well respected, very clearly nailed on to play the tests? just an all-round nice guy, but a hell of a competitor. And his skill set, which is says a lot about how the Lions want to play, you have to respect it. He's a master craftsman at what he does. What have you made of his selection as captain, though? Is that just a move, you think, to so that other players who potentially are in the race don't have to worry about it, just focus on your bloody rugby?
I think that's probably it, actually. I think if you look at players who, if you're saying that your tour captain has to be pretty much a favourite to start in the test series, then other than Conor Murray, in my opinion, Dan Bigger, possibly Stuart Hogg, the only other candidate is Mario Toji, right? And there's clearly something that is on Gatland's mind that is, I just want Itoji to focus on being the absolute world-class second row that he is. And go on.
Well, so today, Itoji, fantastic in defensive lineouts. Just astonishing. Whacking balls out of hands. Just
steeplejack.
And obviously, a lot of credit has to go to the lifters as well to keep up with him and be on the same wavelength and stuff like that. Stuff like that seems to have bedded in pretty well so far. And it's good, you know, it's a skill that probably goes underrated. It's one of those things that's seen Peter Romani lauded for years and years because he is just a genius at that top side of the game. Itoji was fantastic at that today. Do you think that potentially not picking someone like Itoji to be captain, who's not captained England to tournament victories from that position because he hasn't had to because he's had Owen Farrell there, who also was his clubmate. Do you think that an element of not picking him is, apart from the fact that, you know, he captained England to a Junior World Cup win in 2014 in New Zealand, there hasn't really been that much experience. And whilst there's all this talk about that, let's not burden him with that because potentially the guy who's given away quite a lot of penalties recently might do too much to try and lead from the front and actually unburden him with that. So I've used the phrase unburden probably 25,000 times in this podcast about the captaincy. But do you think with him specifically, that's possibly because of the discipline side of things?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, yeah, if it were up to me, and as I've said a number of times here, I probably would have picked Itoji in January. I would have picked Alan Wynne-Jones in March or April, whenever the squad was announced. But right now, I probably would have turned back to Itoji. But at the same time, there's clearly something that I think it comes down to the fact that he is so important to the Lions in this test series that you need to give him every chance that he can have the influence on the test match series that is going to make the whole difference. And I don't think that giving Conor Murray the captaincy is going to phase Conor Murray, despite the fact that he's not necessarily someone we automatically think of as a captain. I just think it's one less thing to worry about. I think if Conor Murray is there, he's going to play his natural game, whether he's captain or not. And I just think that they're possibly a little bit concerned that if they give Mario Toji the captaincy, it might be, to use your phrase, a bit of a burden. And I don't think you can afford to do that, particularly if Alan Wynne-Jones is going to miss the series, as we expect he is, despite a few headlines this week. You need those big game players to concentrate on what they're going to do best. And we saw what Itoji can do today. And I think that it is about not burdening him for me.
You appear to be in a hotel at the moment. What sort of tree would you say that is painted on the wall behind you? Is that a blossom? What is that?
That much, I can tell you, I'm certainly in a hotel at the moment. I am in the Novotel in Leicester. It's some kind of blossom. I don't know. I mean, should we call it? Is this some kind of segue into a cherry blossom Japan reference? Because if it's there, I'm like there, like I'm popping it up to you. I'm popping it up to you. Run with it.
It can be. I did not watch a single second of Japan playing today, but absolutely we can. All I know is that, no, I don't know anything, actually. I didn't watch a second of that game. So, horrible segue. No, I was going to turn that into a who we can see blossoming on this tour, because every so often you'll see players that throw their hand up. By the way, actually, on that, horrible, nothing to do with blossoming on tour. But I mentioned at the top that Owen Farrell will be given every opportunity to play himself into form. for those that haven't watched the Championship, and I count myself amongst those, I haven't been there every week watching Saracens ascend to the Premiership again. But during the Six Nations, there was a lot of detraction for Elliot Daly. And that's one of those things where we talk a lot in our society about, oh, he's knocking people down and blah, blah, blah. You're allowed to say people aren't in good form. Elliot Daly was not in good form for England. And it helped him. He obviously moved to 13 to play for Saracens. He came on today for the Lions at 13. And over the last period with Saracens, he's obviously played himself into form and got his confidence back. And today, I think he really offered something with, I think, his outside fade on a break. When he came on at 13, obviously that moved Owen Farrell to 10. So suddenly that was something, that was a connection that we'd seen with Saracens at the tail end of this season. And he just looked to make a difference. And in fact, I think it was him that threw the pass for Adams' fourth try.
It was.
To go in. And I just think he looks like someone who, certainly if we're talking about versatility, he's got to be one of those guys who that last spot on the bench has got to be his to play for, because he offers so much in so many different positions. And he seems like he's got a bit of the swagger back.
Oh, I 100% agree with that. And to go back to the point we were saying there about players being burdened, he looked like a player who's been completely unshackled. He came off the bench and looked like the running threat and the natural footballer and the player who's got a massive left peg on him. He showed everything in that cameo that he played. And you're absolutely right, the fact that he plays both wings and can play in the centre and can play fullback absolutely puts him in pole position. And this is, but I do also think that it's the influence he could make in the centre that gives a real difference, because you look at the other centres in the squad and they're all very robust. And I think that he is that one, you know, that option at 13 that gives you something that will really make the Springboks coach think about what they're up against.
You say robust. I mean, Chris Harris, everyone's talked about, he's been selected for his defence and he's phenomenal in defence. And that, but that first try, albeit the Gloucester connection with him and Lewis Rees-Samet, you know, lovely little dink from Chris Harris. You know, he's got more in his locker than a lot of people would appreciate.
Look, I'm a big fan of his, and I think he's you know, that's probably something in his game that perhaps people don't give him credit for. Is he's, you know, he's good when he puts boot to ball, and it was a perfectly weighted kick. You absolutely can't deny with that. But yeah, I don't know. But I think he's, I don't know. I just think that if you're looking at all of those available centres, you would say that Daly is the wild card, that kind of the joker in the pack, so to speak, over any of the other options that we've got there who are very, very physical.
Well, on that, actually, because we're going to see, we're going to have a, by definition, midweek game against the Sharks. The kickoff's been moved so that we can see football coming on for some reason. And you'd think that actually there's going to be a lot of guys selected for the Sharks, because Gatland's come out and said, at least in the first three games, everyone is going to get a chance to start. We've seen some tried and tested combinations, or we've seen some guys that have played for the Lions before. It feels like if that's what we're running with, potentially we could see some whack, like just some fantastical combinations in a midweek game. Now, I brought up the captaincy earlier because, you know, the tour captain and whether it's the test captain and all that sort of stuff is up for debate. Stuart Hogg on his third tour was afforded the opportunity to captain the Lions today. Are we going to see three or four different captains for the Lions? Will we see a completely different person handed that opportunity against the Sharks? Will Connor Murray get his first opportunity to captain the Lions? Well, actually, no, by definition, he won't be starting that one because we'll see Davis starting. So we're just going to, I think we might see some stuff that we haven't even seen in the first two games, because you need to get them out of the way to let people go. So actually, the game against the Sharks, who will be better opposition than Hauteng, would you want to see the systems bedding in even more, even regardless of who the personnel is? Or actually, is that one of those where you go, let's embrace the tradition of midweek Lions games and just have it like, who even knows? Let's just give it a go.
Look, I think the embracing the Lions tradition of midweek Lions games, who even knows, comes a few weeks into the tour, doesn't it? That's where Andy Nicol was lucky that he packed his boots when he's on tour with, you know, when he's on holiday with his family. That's where that kind of stuff comes in. I think, you know, I think this is about systems, and they will, like you say, they will pick a side and ensure that everyone has had their chance in the first three games. I don't think it's going to come down to, yeah, who knows what. I think it is still about getting those systems right. And I'm intrigued to see it, because I think even though Japan are a wonderful test nation, I don't think that was the toughest encounter to get out of the way. I kind of, in a way, think that the Sharks will, considering it's a midweek game, be a tougher encounter than actually the first two games have been.
I think we spoke earlier about, and I whacked on a bit earlier about you know, how many games are right for it to make, like, to feel like a proper Lions. I think one of the things that takes away from it, actually, regardless of anything else, is the fact that no matter what game we're watching, we're going to see Lions playing.
Mm.
We're not going to see the Springboks. You know, the Springboks have got, you know, the Springboks played last night. I watched the game last night against Georgia, and, you know, there was a rustiness to the four. They'll be playing Georgia again, and then they're playing the Lions, you know, at the end of it all, on a three test series. But we're not, I suppose it's one of the things that sort of takes away from this, is we're not going to see any of the Springboks playing in any of these games either. Obviously that makes test teams weaker, and the Sharks have worked very hard to bring in a core of very marketable players recently, all of whom are Springboks, and we won't get an opportunity for them to have that. But that game will be a step up. So the opposition is going to be harder. So actually, but then by the same time, the amount of time that the Lions have had together extends, albeit only by a few days. So you're right. It's probably, you know, we'll see what systems come in. I suppose it's around about the game after that you probably see the identity of this team come through. And that's where probably you'll see more of, okay, that's recognisable as this group of Lions. But certainly, because it's only the third game and every player is getting an opportunity to start a test, is, you know, what we talked about earlier about those positions that are up for grabs. For some people, this is their first chance to try and make a grab for those positions. And potentially for some people, already three games into the tour, their window's getting shorter and shorter. It's potentially for some people coming off the bench or starting, having played on the bench already, is in a position that's already hotly contested or already decided. Really, realistically, it's potentially their last chance for some people already. And we're only just at the start of this tour, which is a crazy thing to say out loud.
I think that is kind of I completely understand why we have to reduce the number of games on the tour. It doesn't mean I want it that way, but I do kind of understand the sheer amount of rugby that's been played over the past 12 months, that we have to have a shorter tour than ever. But I kind of think that you've really touched upon an interesting point there, that this is what we love about Lions tours, is that when you get those players, you get an opportunity to play their way into a test jersey. And I'm thinking of, you know, the Tim Rodbers and the Alan Tates, and I don't know, obviously a lot of it harks back to 97 and a very, very different era. But that's the kind of thing that I guess you do miss when you get a truncated tour.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously there's an element of the romanticism goes with it. But then again, I think we're in 2021. Romanticism is something that we're told about with hashtags, because it's all ploys and everything's plastered with sponsors and blah, blah, blah. And realistically, these guys, even if it's a lesser opposition they're playing against, they're absolutely hammering their body. Look, we could discuss the merits of why there are a few games where you're not. You're right. You know, there's not as much opportunity. But then again, that's what makes the great players great, is the ability to put their hands up. And already in the first couple games, we've seen some players that have said, even if I'm not who you had in mind, even if I'm not the best option, I'm going to put my hand up. And it's always interesting when you see the guys that are up for it, but sort of the occasion or the spectacle or the weight of the jersey is too much for them. And then you get the guys who are like, nah, I'm giving this a go, and actually things will come off for me. And, you know, there's, I think, already, and I'd love to know who you think they are, is we've seen some players that have already said, you know, I want to be throw myself in the mix.
I'm going to finish on this in the last 30 seconds, Al, because I know both of us are keen to go and watch the football, even if I am watching it in a hotel bar in Leicester. I think that Watson did that today. I think that Josh Adams has done it on the last 2 days, the last two match days. Who else is really impressive? I thought that Itoje was mighty impressive today, and I thought Courtney Laws was impressive as well. So I think that there are definitely those players who've 100% thrown their hands up.
I'd agree with all that, and I think it'll be fascinating. I'm wondering what here's the great thing. Who knows what Hail Marys we're going to see against the Sharks?
100%. Right. When can we expect to read the next issue of Rugby World, which I know all of our listeners will be interested in?
Yeah, we just went to print on yesterday, which is Friday. So we've got a week before that will come out. And then the Tuesday of the week before the first test, it will come out. So as you can imagine, rah, 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 bring on the box.
Rah, 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 bring on the box. 100% to that. Big thank you to Alan Dimmock for joining us. As always, it's an absolute pleasure to chat to you, Al. And a big thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. And you can get yourself some fantastic quality coffee with some wonderful new branding, I have to say. Scott's done a fantastic job at making the product look even better, and I know how good it tastes. So if you want to do that, you can go to socoffeetrades.co.uk. to get yourself some top quality coffee. We will be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.